Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
I am here with John. How do you say your last name, dude?
Pazinski?
That's what I call you.
Oh, that's what you call me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What, is that your real name, though?
John Poshesnik.
Okay, Pazinski.
Yeah, Pazinski. Let's roll with it.
I'm going to go with Pazinski.
that sounds a lot better.
Poshesnik.
Pazinski might be the new pronunciation. I might have to legally
How do you say it again?
Poshesnik.
Poshesnik. What is that?
It's Ukrainian.
You're Ukrainian?
Yes.
Are you from Chernobyl?
No.
Isn't that the Ukraine?
That is in the Ukraine. Yeah. Luckily, none of my ancestors were around there.
Were you born in the U.S.?
Yeah. Yep. So
we let you in? I thought Trump wasn't letting you in.
Well, he doesn't want to let me in when I come back, but I snuck in.
You did?
First time around, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
John, who are you? What do you do, man? Talk to us. How old are you?
Let's see. I'm 33.
You're 33 years old?
33-year-old general dentist from Indianapolis, Indiana.
And how many practices do you have?
So I have 4 practices right now.
And do you have 4 partners?
I have 4 associate doctors,
okay,
plus myself.
In each practice, 1 doctor?
1 doctor in each practice.
And then you kind of float
myself
between?
Yeah. Yep. I act almost like the traveling specialist.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The traveling man,
right? I actually have one of those little kits that you see the hairdressers take around. It's on wheels, and I load up my implant motor and implants and ortho supplies.
Are you so cheap you just won't buy one for each office?
Hell yeah, I'm cheap. Okay. Come on, man.
All right. So selfishly, I've wanted to talk to you for a while. I don't know why I just didn't do it the last time you were here. I think you were inebriated and that's why we couldn't do it.
No, that must have been, you were thinking the wrong guy.
That must have been
me.
Rich.
That wasn't me. Rich. That was definitely Rich.
Okay. So how did a 33-year-old, 33, correct?
33.
Get from 0 to 4?
0 to 4.
Did you set out for that to happen? Did you think that in dental school?
No.
No.
No, I didn't.
All right.
No. I always pictured myself wanting my own business, and that's what really drew me to dentistry. I loved the idea of being able to be a part of healthcare, but still getting to be a part of the, you know, the entrepreneurial businessman kind of spirit. And that's always been inside of me. And so that's what really got me started in dentistry. So I had my heart set on getting my own practice. Went through a GPR, actually 3 months into it, realized that I hated it. And found a practice in Columbia, South Carolina.
So you quit?
I quit the GPR.
Oh, dude, you could never apply again.
I know. Can you imagine if I tried to apply?
Did they kick you out?
We parted ways mutually.
So they wanted you gone too?
I don't think they were sad to see me go. Frankly, I was producing too much. And I'm saying that not trying to be a turd.
What does that mean, you're producing too much?
I was seeing too many patients. I was being told to slow down. The VA that I was at was...
Oh, VAs.
My
uncle went to work for VA when he retired from cardiology. And the second week in, he got a sit down to from the other physicians, says you can't work this hard.
That's basically what happened. My problem was that the rules and structures there didn't really fit my style.
But why'd you go to that GPR?
Because I thought I needed experience.
And but why that one? Was it the only one you got into?
It was the one I got into.
The only one?
Yep. Well, it's the match. You get matched.
Why'd you rank it high?
I didn't.
Oh, so nobody else wanted you.
Exactly. You're putting the pieces together. Thanks for calling me out on that one.
Well, I want to be honest, right? All right, so you're like me. You're a failure.
Exactly.
Nobody wanted you, so you went and so you got out 3 months out of your GPR.
Yeah.
You quit your GPR,
yes,
or got let go from your GPR. A story still to be determined. Okay.
Yes.
And did you buy a practice right away, or did you work for somebody?
No. So I had, like I said, I had my heart set on a practice in South Carolina, and actually moved to South Carolina.
Where in South Carolina?
Columbia. Love Columbia. Awesome city. Really fun place. Love the college town atmosphere.
Hootie's from there.
Hootie's from there, which really was a big draw to me. Really? Turns out that his name isn't actually Hootie, it's Darius Rucker.
Yeah.
I found that out once.
And
I
now
moved
he
there.
Sings country.
I know. Can you believe that?
He's a black man singing country.
Yeah. Well, I thought he was Indian at first.
What?
I don't know. He just kind of looked like you.
Well, okay.
Yeah. It's a compliment.
That's a compliment, dude. I'll take
right?
that.
So I moved down there, packed my car up. All of my possessions are
Were
in
you
my
married?
Car. I was married. My wife stayed back. Luckily, she had a job. But she worked for Eli Lilly, big pharmaceutical company.
Yep.
So she's a pharmacist. She was working in industry with them. And I find this practice and move. And I leave her at home to sell the house and basically try and convince her boss that she can do her job remotely from South Carolina.
Okay.
So they didn't know that we had this plan. I moved down there. I'm getting ready to close on the practice. And I drive down on a Sunday, kind of meet the guy. It was the first time I met the dentist, too, which was really a smart move on my behalf. Mm-hmm. So met the guy for the first time. See the practice. I'm like, yep, still like it. I spent all day Monday in his computer system digging through charts, looking at x-rays, and started to realize it might not be the same practice that I was advertised as. Mm-hmm. And realized this probably isn't the best thing for me.
So you got right back in your car?
So
you quit again?
I didn't get right back in my car. I slept on it. And then I got
to
get...
Did you sleep in the car?
I slept... No, I was sleeping at a by-the-week motel because that was my game plan.
Was it owned by Indians?
Yes.
Probably.
Absolutely.
Was it a roadside motel?
Well, you know it. Okay. You know it. Yeah. In the South.
In the South, yeah.
It was perfect. It was
perfect. Indians own every motel in the South.
It was perfect.
Was it a motor lodge?
No, it was a... The hallways were inside.
Okay.
It was inside hallways.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, not outside hallways.
Not possibly not. When I was growing up, those were high class Indian motel owners.
Sure.
They had interior hallway properties. When I was growing up, we had exterior hallway properties. So we were low class Indian motel owners.
So I'm living there. I slept on it. Go back to the practice and I'm kind of like locked in this room and it's hot, sweaty room in the South. I've got the banker.
Kind of like we are now.
Right now, exactly. I mean, your basement's got a little bit higher ceilings than that room. But
okay.
Banker, seller, the broker, and myself. And they're all in between me and the door.
So you're going down there to buy this practice.
I was going down there to buy it. And on Tuesday, we were going to sign the paperwork. Wednesday, I was going to start working. And on Tuesday, I had to look them all in the eyes and say, this isn't right. This isn't for me. And I walked away.
Why didn't you just text it to them like the rest of you millennials do?
Texting wasn't a thing back then. This is like 2011, man.
This was 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
2010. It was 2010.
The iPhone was texting became a thing when the iPhone came out, dude. Okay.
Right? So, yeah, no. I felt like I had to tell them face-to-face that this wasn't right for me. And
they were
a little bit less than pleased.
Yeah.
It was a pretty uncomfortable thing. Like I said, they were between me and the door. So I had to get through these... Mm-hmm. Surly Southern guys, and
they bring their flags out.
Yeah, it was. Of course, they all were in huge trucks. Like that's how they drove there. So I'm like,
you're making fun of trucks. Brian's gonna come over here and kick your ass, dude. Geez.
Well, he could kick my ass though, but he shoots everything that moves. So I'm not much different. I'm just on two legs. So I leave. I get back in the car and come back home.
How long a drive was that?
So it was a 11-hour drive.
Did you have diarrhea from the stress?
Yes. I had to stop many times. And in fact, on the way back, my car
dies. I'm being dead serious about that.
My stomach was in knots.
Yeah,
it was terrible. On the way back, my car dies.
What kind of car did you have? A Ferrari?
You're hilarious. Oh, my God. No, so the car dies in traffic outside of Louisville. So I'm like 2 hours from home, hour and a half from home. Yeah. Car dies, middle of rush hour traffic. And I'm like,
You call Uber?
I just called Uber and got right home.
In 2011, before it existed?
Yeah, exactly. No, I had this thing called a AAA card.
Okay.
And I had to call on the phone and wait for the AAA guy to come out and tow me to the repair shop. So it's one of those moments that just remains like stuck in my brain forever. Like, I was not prepared for this. I didn't do my homework. I didn't do my research. I wasn't prepared for it. But luckily, I was willing to say, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to get out. Because if I just pushed through and said, I'll figure it out. It'll be okay. I'll just figure it out. I don't think I'd be here with you right now. My career would have gone a totally different path.
Okay. Because you made that decision to leave.
Because I made that decision.
Columbia, South Carolina, because you didn't like Hootie anymore. His name was Darius Rucker.
Exactly. Once I found that out, I said, that's a deal breaker. Okay. It's my non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable. Okay.
Exactly. So it was a really hard decision, but I feel like that helped get me where I am. And that's, you know, I've got kind of that immigrant spirit in me too, because I'm a second generation here in the States. So my dad was born here. My mom was born here. But I kind of carried that spirit because that's what my grandparents came to this country with. They came here with nothing. They worked their tails off.
They came with $7, correct?
Exactly.
Because every immigrant somehow only comes with
$7.
That's it.
That's all they let them in with.
I don't think that's true.
If you had eight, they would take that last dollar.
I don't think so, but that's okay.
You know, we weren't there, so how could we say?
I'm just saying, they walked uphill in snow both ways.
Right. So, fighting through those
challenges.
Maybe
in Ukraine they probably did.
Well, they actually did.
Yeah, that's true.
So fighting through those challenges, and that's how I feel like I've been able to really get to where I am in my career, because in life we're always going to have these challenges, and we all face challenges, and there's been a few in particular in my life, but that was the very first one.
Okay. So you got in your car, you got back home.
Yep.
Took a little longer than you thought.
A little bit longer, a little pit stop. That's okay. Got back home. So now I'm an unemployed dentist.
You've been kicked out / quit.
Yes.
A program in 3 months.
Yes.
Then you drove to Columbia, South yes. Carolina to buy a practice, and yep. you backed out and quit on that as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you still don't have a job yet.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a pretty inspiring story so far, right? Like I'm really, really
You're a typical millennial.
Yes.
Okay. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. But yeah. All right. So now what do you do?
All right. So I just through happenstance, a job gets posted on the local dental society webpage mm-hmm. the day I get back. I call these people immediately and I get to go and interview. It's a private practice. It's about 40 minutes away from home. So kind of out in a more rural area. It's a perfect situation for me. They're looking for somebody immediately full time. And I interviewed on a Friday, and the following Monday I started. It was just
that didn't bother you? That they needed you that badly so quickly?
I needed them more than they needed me at that point.
Did you tell them that you quit or got fired from your residency?
Yes, oh yeah. There was total transparency.
Okay.
So,
did you tell them that you backed out on the sale of a practice?
Yes, oh yeah.
You left some poor old guy at the altar?
Yep. Yep. Okay. So I there's full transparency there because okay. I felt like that was the right thing to do at the time. So I worked at that practice for about 2.5 years as an associate, full time.
Two and a half years.
Yep. So I spent 2.5 years there, and it was a great relationship between me and the owner doctor. We got along great. We saw treatment philosophy kind of the same way. We felt really importantly about treating our patients right. And I learned a lot about running a business from him as well.
How'd you learn that? Did he purposely set up for that, or did you ask for that?
He didn't. I asked for it. Okay. I asked a lot of questions. I was really curious about our budget. I was really curious about what our P&L looked like on a monthly basis. And he was really open and willing to share those kind of things with me, which really meant a lot to me. And, you know, it was kind of surprising to me that there was never really anything on the table as far as a potential to buy into the mm-hmm. practice, because he knew that that was ultimately what I was really looking for. So started looking a little bit more aggressively about 2 years into the job, mm-hmm. found a practice that I thought was, I was dead set on. And
you left them at the altar.
We were ready. This is where the story takes a fun twist. We were ready to go. We had financing ready, and he left me at the altar.
What?
He backed
karma,
out.
Dude.
He backed out. It was total karma. And I was just crushed. I was crushed. It was like, you know,
you went home crying that day, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. You could see the tears just rolling right down my face. It was brutal though, because it really felt like something had been taken from me that I really wanted. Mm-hmm. And I felt really good about it. So that was a tough thing, but it's okay. I kept plugging along, kept working, and found finally the practice that I initially got. All right. So my first practice, found it and vetted the doctor a lot, given some of my previous scenarios. I knew there was no way she was backing out. She was a 42-year-old woman that was retiring because her husband was a gazillionaire, really didn't need to work anymore. She was kind of done with practice. I saw a lot of potential in her practice. She was doing no specialty
define
work at all.
Define how you saw potential in the practice.
So she was doing no specialty work whatsoever. Okay. This woman showed up at 10 a.m. Well, the first patient was at 10 a.m. She'd show up at about 10:45. Typically, the patient would be waiting for about 15 minutes for their hygiene check. She'd jet out of there about 4.
No, dude, how do I get that life?
Right? You get born into it, I think. It's not the ideal, but it worked for her. And it was a great situation for me because I knew that the patients needed somebody that was going to be there, be attentive to their needs, take care of what they needed, do some of the specialty work in the office, take care of root canals right there on the spot for them. Get involved in some of the minor orthodontics at first.
You saw the potential, not that there was a bunch of large old amalgam fillings that was being undiagnosed, but you saw potential in the procedures you could add to the practice.
Exactly. Because it was a very mature practice. So these patients, for the most part, had their basic restorative taken care of, even a lot of their major restorative work. So from day one, I was going in replacing defective crowns, going in replacing defective fillings that had been there for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, like you said, the big, huge alloy mm-hmm. disaster that we were trying to clean up. And felt like this is a good situation for me. And it really worked well. Patients were really receptive to it. The team, although they were pretty hesitant at first about this young guy coming in when they had this kind of cushy life and I was holding them pretty accountable for what they should be doing, they turned around pretty quickly once they saw what good we were doing
for
the patients.
Did she stick around?
She did not. We closed on a Monday, and on Tuesday, she was supposed to be there to start signing the letters, and she didn't show up. And I saw her 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. So she
it was the country club.
It was a total walkaway. Actually, it was at the country club where I was a guest of someone else, and she was there.
What it really was at the country club?
I'm not kidding. I was making that up. It was pretty much like the story of our situation.
Okay.
But it was a good situation.
Were you burdened with debt?
I was burdened
when you got out of school
with student loan debt. Yep.
How
absolutely.
Much?
About $300,000.
Okay, but that didn't deter you from buying a practice. Did it deter you from taking a CE? Did you take a CE?
It didn't deter me from buying a practice because actually by the time I had bought the practice, I had my student loan debt.
So you paid it off during your associateship?
Yes, yep. Really went to town paying it down. Every time that there was a bonus that came through with the office, just went right to the student loan debt. It was the same when my wife had a bonus check come in. Pay the loans down. Because we really wanted to make sure that we were financially secure in our home so that we could then go out and I could start to do some of these business ventures that I wanted to do.
Are your parents in business?
No, my dad was a lifelong business guy for the corporation. My mom was a nurse growing up, and then she spent time at home with the kids towards the later part of our childhood.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So how'd you go from one practice to two?
So the leap from one to two was...
Is that the most difficult, by the way?
No, it was actually the easiest.
Okay.
Because I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
But you knew you wanted a second practice.
I knew I wanted a second practice. And to me, at first, I looked at it for all the wrong reasons. I wanted a second practice because I thought it would be easy money, easy cash flow. I saw what I was doing on a monthly basis. I saw the cash flow that we had. And I said, geez, I can replicate this. It's easy. We'll just drop another associate in. We can replicate this on and on and on. Right? Not a problem. That might work if you don't buy a practice that's an hour and a half away that you are never at, and expected to just run on its own. And I did all of those things.
So you were dumb.
I was incredibly dumb.
Okay.
Incredibly
dumb. How did that set you back?
It set me back in the aspect that there was not any of the cash flow that I was expecting.
Was it a negative cash flow?
It was not negative.
Well, so it wasn't totally dumb.
So it wasn't the worst thing ever. I didn't lose money on the practice. And you know what? I can sit here and say that I employed a great associate and she was able to make a living. So I guess that's great. And I employed some good people and they could make a living. And we helped a lot of patients. But
do you still have this practice?
I do have this practice. And I guess I can divulge this by the time this gets out on the air. It'll probably have happened. This is actually a practice that I'm divesting. I'm going to be selling this practice off.
So you'll go down to three?
Go down to three. This practice, because of the geographical implications.
I'm
going to
put this podcast up tonight.
Okay, perfect. No, nobody listens to it.
No, I'm messing with you. Okay. So geographically,
it's tough to manage because of the time aspect.
Hour and a half away.
And it's not even the time so much, but it's the only practice that's in that direction. It's south of everything, dead south. Okay. The other three offices, although they're not right next door to each other, they're all kind of clustered.
Okay.
Together in a way.
They're kind of on the way.
Exactly.
From A to Z,
exactly.
You pass B and C.
Exactly. Yeah. You can navigate your way around mm-hmm. in a day relatively well. So between that and then the fact that we've really struggled with having a doctor down there, the associate that I had there for a long time, she moved out to Colorado. She decided she needed a change in life. She moved out. Good for her. I'm excited for her. It's what she needed to do. So that's... You know, I feel like that's one of my biggest duties is getting these doctors prepared for the next step in their life.
You're like a John Calipari in a way.
I feel it's really important. I know what dentistry has done for me. Mm-hmm. I love dentistry. And if I can give that same feeling to the doctors that work for me, work with me, at the end of my career, if I can look back and say that I gave the people that experience, I'm going to be really happy with it.
That's awesome. How do you get from two to three?
So two to three was...
Especially when you didn't make money on number two.
Yeah. So 2 to 3 was an interesting one, because when I went from 2 to 3, I said, okay, great. I figured out all the stuff I did wrong with number two. And by now I was realizing that I needed a little help. I couldn't do this all on my own. So I'd hired on some, for lack of a better term, call them corporate employees. Mm-hmm. I have some behind the scenes employees that are helping run some of the aspects of the business that I simply don't have time or the effort or patience to do.
Things like what?
Things like human resources, hiring people, firing people, having the difficult conversations about performance, mm-hmm. doing the basic reviews that need to happen on kind of an ongoing basis. They don't even necessarily do it, but they make sure to prompt me mm-hmm. when I need to do things.
Like when you need to get involved.
Like when I need to get involved. Hey, Doc, we've had this conversation 3 times with so-and-so. It's time. Mm-hmm. We need you to step in. We need you to get the associate doctor involved too. So I brought my kind of right-hand woman on. She's Kathy. She's my Kathy. And she does everything for me. She takes care of a lot of things for me. So I had her on board. And with her background, which was in corporate dentistry, I said, okay, great. We've kind of ironed out some of the kinks. We're going to make this different. I know what to not do now. I've learned from my mistakes. We're not going to do that with number three. And number three was the exact opposite of number one. It was the classic big, huge patchwork alloys. Mm-hmm. No sort of comprehensive dental plan at all for these patients. It was single tooth dentistry to the T. And it's in a community that's not that far out of the way of a big city, but it feels like it. It's 70 miles outside of Indianapolis, but that's less than an hour on the interstate.
Yeah.
And so these patients want.
Except when the cows are in the way.
Well, except when the cows, you know, cause a pile up on the highway. But these patients want comprehensive care. And that's what I realized almost day one. They want this care.
They just weren't given the opportunity to say yes to the best.
Exactly. And so immediately day one, we had Cone Beam in that office. Immediately day one, we had Sarek in that office.
Because you already had it?
Because I saw the success that it brought me in my first practice and also the second practice. The success for the patients, the success for the doctor, and ultimately, that's what we really need to do.
So did the doctor you buy from stay there in the number three practice?
He stayed for about 2 months. We had a succession plan in place. He knew that I needed him on board. I bought the practice at the end of April. I had a doctor already identified for the practice. He was graduating dental school, fresh out of school, dropped him in the practice the day he got his license.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, that relationship only lasted about 6 months. Probably wasn't the style of practice that he was looking for. And I know the person that he moved on to work for, and it seems like that's a much better fit. And in a way, it was the biggest blessing that I could have had, because the doctor I have out there now is incredibly talented. She's incredibly excited about the opportunity she has to help these patients, and she really sees the bigger picture.
Is she here this weekend?
She's not here this weekend. Okay. I want to bring her down to some of your other coursework. Okay. And get her involved in that, because she's the kind of person that if you tell her to do something and she understands why it's important, it just happens.
Okay.
And it's really fun to see that. And it's fun to work with people like that. Those are the people I want to be around.
Yeah, absolutely. How'd you go from 3 to 4?
So then 3 to 4, it's a funny story. Number 4 should have actually been number 3.
So let me back up for a second.
Yeah.
Well, how much time frame has there been between each acquisition?
Okay, that's a great question. So timeline. May of 2013.
You buy number
buy
one?
Buy number one. July of 2014.
So about a year and a little bit later.
Yeah, about a year later, buy number two. And then it is April of 2016. So a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Before you buy number three.
Before I buy number three. So decent gap in between there. But then 2 months later, I have number four.
Were you actively looking?
Yes.
Or something came around?
So I'd been actively looking when number three and four both came into play. And number four, like I said, should have been number three. I met the doctor. It was probably before the holidays of 2015. I was doing a live surgery event at my office, and he was in attendance. And afterwards, he stuck around and we started talking. He was really excited about the guided surgery that I was doing and milling surgical guides and all these different things. And he goes, you know, John, I've really been looking for somebody like this to take over my practice. I want to continue to work a little bit. I want to continue to work with implants and do this, that, and the other thing. And I feel like this would be a really good situation for us. And I said, you know what? That sounds ideal to me too. Sounds great. I can learn about your practice, learn about your patients. It can be a nice transition as you ease into retirement. And the process drug on. And we hit some roadblocks along the way. And looking back at it, those probably should have been the red flags mm-hmm. that really said, stop, think about this a little bit more. But it's one of those things where there's almost so much momentum once it got going again that you just couldn't stop it.
Okay.
So we closed on the deal at the end of June. And
about
almost
a year later, then.
So almost a year later.
Oh, two months later, sorry.
Yeah, two months after number three. Close on it. And almost from the get-go, we had a pretty rocky time.
With the selling doctor. He stayed on
as an associate for a long term. We had a 1-year commitment between us, and it really wasn't the best fit because he didn't enjoy some of the things we were doing with practice. He didn't enjoy some of the technology that we were integrating and requiring.
And didn't have it, so you bought it.
Exactly.
So not only did you assume a practice loan, you also right away put Sarek and Cohnbeam in there.
Yes, exactly.
So all four of your practices have Sarek and Cohnbeam.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So to make a long story short with that, we ended up mutually parting ways at the end of 2016. So right at Christmas and New Year's, we parted ways. He was done in the practice. And since then, we've seen a tremendous turnaround because now the team realizes it's my practice and it's not the old doctor's practice.
Right.
And the principles that are really important to me, they're now understanding the benefit of them. So we've seen a significant turnaround and really hoping to continue to ride that wave and really push things forward.
All right. What's holding you back from getting number 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60?
Yeah. So at this point, it becomes a pretty simple problem, and it's financial.
Okay. Financial in what sense? That you're not making enough?
Financial in the sense that there's a number of financial institutions that no matter how well the practices are performing as a business unit, mm-hmm. all they're worried about is a debt number. And when they see the amount of debt that I've personally assumed by myself, 100%. They simply
What's
don't
that number,
touch
by the way, if you don't mind sharing?
It's well north of $3 million.
Okay.
And they're very...
Do you own the real estate in any of these practices?
I own the real estate in two of the practices.
Okay.
And they're just hesitant to want to touch that. And okay. And I can't say I fault them. I mean, dentistry has a tremendously low default rate, but at the same time, I'm one person
right. That's
shouldering all the responsibility. And at a certain time, their policies are their policies.
Yeah.
So that's one of the big holdups for me. But the other thing that I'm really wanting to make sure that I do is I want to make sure that what we're doing now is the right way. Because it feels right, and I can see the difference than my associate doctors mm-hmm. now. But I want to get the feedback from them. Does this feel right to you? Does mm-hmm. this feel like this practice is going in the right way for you? With everything we've done, does this feel like what you want? Because, yeah, we're going to do what I want to do, but I still need the associates to buy in.
To allow you to do what you gotta
exactly,
do.
Exactly.
Right. How have you cultivated, how many associates have you gone through in these four practices?
So let's see. There have been four failed associateships.
And what made them fail?
So there were two that were simply not the quality of dentist that okay. I needed.
So you bad hiring decisions in the way.
Yes, absolutely.
How would you recommend somebody to look back from your experience mm-hmm. and how could you have nipped that in the bud or even noticed that before it even got to that point?
Number one thing you have to do this, and it's not whether it's a dentist, I don't care if it's a dentist, a front office person, an assistant, somebody that's going to pay your bills or stuff statements. You need to do a personality test.
And whether be more specific with me.
Whether you do a DISC profile or there's all kinds of different profiling ways that you can do this, pay the $40 for the online test and just see what their personality is. And there's no right or wrong answer to these, but you know what you're getting when you get into it.
Okay.
It's also going
to... Did you find them to be pretty accurate?
Yeah. 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 With the last two that we've done.
Okay.
Yeah. We haven't done nearly enough of them.
And what do you try to do? Match them to your personality?
No. Absolutely not.
And so the opposite of that.
And
I'm not saying that the opposite of your personality, sure. but you're purposely trying not to match them to your personality.
I don't want anyone like me.
Okay. That's interesting. I think why my associateships have failed.
I don't want anyone like myself, because if I had somebody truly like me, there would be chaos. There'd be absolute chaos. It's barely enough to hold it together with me making all kinds of crazy decisions.
Okay.
If we had everyone doing that, it would be really difficult. But there are certain things that I am going to be looking for in future hiring decisions. Are they willing to take direction? Mm-hmm. Are they self-aware of when they have problems? Are they self-aware of the people around them? Are they paying attention to how their actions impact others? Those are the things that are really important to me in any position, but particularly the dentist.
Right.
Because they...
Well, they're the face of the practice.
They're the face of the practice.
Even though they're the associate.
They're leading the team on a daily basis, because I'm one guy. And although I travel around all these offices, I can't be everywhere at
every
the same
day.
Time, yeah. every day. And so I need somebody that at least believes in what we're doing.
Okay. What would you tell somebody that's looking to possibly go into multiple practice ownership? Is it as easy as some people make it sound?
Absolutely not.
What are some sacrifices you've had to make?
There's been three big sacrifices. One is the time commitment. I wouldn't even say it doubles. It's exponential.
Is there a stress component to that time?
Significant stress component. I mean, there's... I try not to let it affect me on a daily basis, but, you know, I talk to my father once a week, and every time I talk to him, at some point in the conversation, he goes, "I just don't understand how you sleep at night." He goes, "How do you even fall asleep at night?" And I said, "Dad, If I didn't go to sleep, that'd just be 8 more hours for me to be scared shitless." and it's true, because there's significant stress. And I'm not afraid of what I'm doing, but the stress involved is because I want it to go right. I want it to be perfect. I want it to be the way that I'm imagining it. And at a certain point, this goes beyond any financial implications. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond treatment outcomes. This is my legacy. And that's the way I see it. This is what I want to be really known for. I want to create a legacy. And when things aren't going perfect, I get stressed about that. When things aren't going well, I get stressed about it. When we're having an assistant that just doesn't understand why it's so important to take a CT perfectly without the patient moving when we're getting ready to do a big implant case, that stuff stresses me out. So it's the stress component is huge. But then there's a financial commitment that you just have to be willing to make. And I would say I was incredibly lucky that with all the things I did wrong, I didn't lose my shirt on any of these deals.
Has it been hard to find associates?
It's been incredibly difficult to find.
Do you need more than 4?
Yes.
What's holding you back from getting more?
The talent pool. Mm-hmm. I've really yet to find or interview anyone that I feel like could do the kinds of things that I want them to do. And we're making it work with what I have right now, but eventually we will need to be adding more doctors to provide some of the services that maybe the current doctors don't have interest in doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, for myself,
like Botox,
like endo, like
I'm listening to
some
you.
More advanced ortho concepts. And these are all things I really enjoy doing. Implants, another big part of my practice. But I need somebody else to want to do those things in the practices and hold those doctors accountable to actually treatment plan and talk to the patients about those things and make sure they get on the schedule.
So one of the things, without saying names in the procedure, mm-hmm. that was an interesting conversation we had was the battle between people that want to do a procedure that's not in the core business of your practice.
Sure.
But you don't want to stifle... Yeah. people's enthusiasm and ingenuity, but at the same time, you want to be true to your practice. So how do we handle that?
That's a really fine line, and you hit it right on the head. The last thing that I need to do is crush anyone or right. hold them back. But what I feel like my biggest job is in my mentoring of my doctors is to help them get to the point in their career where they can make decisions about the things they want to add to their beyond the core requirements of their job. So to me, for any dentist that's going to work for me, I see a few things that are important to their core skill set. Basic restorative. come on, that's basic no-brainer. Restorative basic restorative.
Fillings and crowns?
Fillings. CEREC crowns, because again, we're CEREC office. Nothing gets sent to the lab unless we don't have the physical equipment to do it. Okay. So zirconia crowns in a couple of the offices, those things. They have to be very proficient with that. I expect everyone to be able to, at the very least, access a tooth for endo. At the very least, access the tooth, put a file in it, and get the person feeling a little bit better. At the very least. If you're not comfortable completing an upper second molar on somebody that can't open all the way, I understand that. That's not the point of this, but being proficient at endo and comfortable doing that. And then finally, extractions.
Okay.
Being proficient at extractions.
So repeat those for me again. Basic restorative, meaning fillings.
Yes.
CEREC crowns. Mm-hmm. At least access root canals.
Yep.
So it's to get people out of pain.
Yep.
And then take out teeth.
Yes.
Okay.
And I feel
that
like
that doesn't sound that hard.
It doesn't. And to me, that sounds like the core requirements of being a dentist.
So what if somebody wants to come to your practice and do implants?
That's great. Do the show me that you have the training. Let's walk through an implant. Let's pretend walk through an implant. You show me how you would set up for an implant case. Show me the surgical plan that you have on a cone beam. Talk to me about the...
I don't need a cone beam. I can just slam them in.
Okay, that's great. So now talk to me about the surgical principles you use. Talk to me about how you plan these cases out. And if somebody doesn't use a cone beam, okay. As long as they'll listen to me, why they should be and why they will be. And they accept that they will be. Cone beam to me is a non-negotiable. If somebody came to me and said, Doc, I want to work for you. I want to place all your implants, but don't worry, I don't need a cone beam. I'd say that's great, but you can go find a job elsewhere. I don't care. I don't care if you've placed 10,000 implants without any issues. That's not the way that we do things.
Okay. So you draw the line there.
I absolutely draw the line. That doesn't mean that all surgeries have to be guided, but cone beam...
They have to be virtually planned.
Cone beam must be used to virtually plan every single implant case.
All right. What's the average age of your associate? And by age, I don't mean physical age. I mean year out of school.
Well, there's a pretty sharp divide. You've got
four associates.
We've got four associates. So I have one that's been out of school for probably 23 years.
Okay.
And then three associates that have each been out for 2 years.
Okay. Where would you say, which one, without naming names, mm-hmm. are you finding that they're equally producing for you and equally producing for your business?
I would say that they're all equally producing for the type of practice that they're in right now.
Okay.
For the practice that they are physically in, they're producing on an equal percentage, equal level. Yep.
Okay. All right. So you're happy with everybody?
I feel really good about where they are in their development.
Okay.
And that's...
Now you said development. Talk to me about your role in their development and what you're doing to develop them.
So the biggest thing that I want to do to develop them is help them with the communication that we need to...
How to talk to patients.
Talk to patients. That's the biggest thing. Communication is how you've gotten to where you are, and I feel like communication is how I've gotten to where I am.
Right.
Because you can have all the skills in the world, but if you can't talk to somebody, there's no way that you're going
to
get anything.
You can't get somebody to trust you.
Exactly. And it's all about trust. And that's what we keep coming back to. Trusting. Trusting in the doctor. Trusting in the team. And... That's where I'm coaching them. It's just constant coaching and listening to exams. So between myself and Kathy, and now she has two people working with her that are in the practices, where one of us is physically in a practice every day, listening to exams, listening to the doctors interact with their team, seeing how those interactions are going, making sure to pull them aside immediately and give them feedback. Hey, I heard how you're talking to the assistant. I know that you weren't happy with the way that they set up for that crown, but come on, you can't beat them down that way. That's not fair. So,
and you do this how often with them?
I try to do it as soon as I see something. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. Do you have set aside times that you spend to go over clinical cases or what kind of preset times do you have with your team?
That's something that I really need to work on. I really need to work on scheduling and actual time. And I keep saying I'm going to do it, and I just don't do it.
Just have somebody else do it for you.
Exactly. And there's no excuse for it. There's no reason not to.
Is it important, you think?
It's super important. I want to spend time with them once a week, every week, 30 minutes. I mean, this doesn't need to be some long, drawn-out, you know, case presentation. Let's just sit down, or even if it's virtually, we can Skype and look at cases together and show me some of the things you're working on that are going great. Show me some things that you're concerned about or confused about. And let's just talk about it. Let's have photos. Let's have photography. Mm-hmm. Nice big pictures.
So you showed me today this, we'll use brand names, Shofu camera. Mm-hmm. Do you like that?
I love it.
Okay,
so I'm loving that.
Where do you use it? Do you use it? The hygienists use it?
So the assistants are using it to document all my cases. Mm-hmm. I like to document pre and post-op mm-hmm. and intraoperative photos of all the cases. I'm using it for orthodontic purposes, for treatment planning purposes, for big cases. And we haven't gotten to the point of using it in hygiene because, of course, I did exactly what you told me not to do. Mm-hmm. And I bought about $24,000 of intraoral cameras, which
you made somebody happy.
It made somebody very happy. And caries detection cameras.
Okay.
Which the associate doctors really do like. And I see a huge benefit to that because it's one more piece of data to allow the patient to start to trust you, because it's no longer you have a cavity. It's, hey, look at this picture. Let me tell you about what I see going on, what this picture means. And so for that, I see some value in it. But I want to get to where exactly you are taking pictures.
Where do you think I am?
Taking pictures with the camera.
So I'm taking pictures with the camera?
No, the team.
Okay.
Yep. And again, it's something I have no excuses for.
Okay.
But it needs to happen. But
what are you doing great in your practice? Practice says.
So I think the thing that we do the best compared to a lot of other people around us especially, is that we really make an effort to do everything we can to get the patient taken care of immediately. There, in my mind, there is no reason to delay somebody's treatment if they have the ability and we have the ability to take care of them now. Save them a visit, same day dentistry, mm-hmm. get them scheduled back immediately, help them out, because we all know, we've all been in this situation where we say, yeah, you've got a little crack there. You need to come back for your crown.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll get you scheduled in 3 weeks. And what happens in the meantime?
Yeah.
They forget. Yeah. Something comes up. It gets pushed off. Next thing you know, it's a year later. They bit down on something wrong. They crack the tooth and they lose it.
Yeah.
And to me, there's no reason for that to happen. So I'm all about really taking care of the patient immediately. But at the same time, where we really excel is the education aspect. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've seen that we do a lot better than some other offices I've had the pleasure of looking at, we actually talk to patients about consequences of neglect. So it's not, you need to do this crown because you have a crack. It's, you have a crack in your tooth, and this is what might happen if we do nothing about it. Does that worry mm-hmm. you? And at that point, with most patients, you don't even have to tell them what you're going to do. I need to see you back for about an hour and a half, and we're going to take care of it. And if they've been through the process before, they know that means a crown.
All right. What are you doing specifically on the communication end with the associates?
So,
any CEs, any books, any cassettes?
Yeah, cassettes. Well, I think what I'm using with them,
the big thing,
it actually was a cassette, maybe a CD.
A laser disc.
The Paul Homily DVD or CD set. Yeah. Really,
it's a $30 book on Amazon. It's a
$10 audiobook.
$10 MP3 download.
It's incredible. I told you this. It's downloaded and saved on the hard drive in my computer's entertainment or my car's entertainment system. I just queue it up when I'm on the drive, listen to a chapter. Yeah. That kind of stuff to me is the kind of thing that we all should be investing in ourselves. And so I'm always looking for those kind of things, those kind of podcasts, those kind of discussions that they can just hear real people talking about real things.
What are you doing down here this weekend?
So I'm down here doing a remedial course on your Sleep 101 course because it didn't stick the first time. No, I'm down here with one of my associates and one of my front office team members who really are interested in sleep.
Did they express this interest on their own, or did you express it and then they kind of took it?
I expressed how important it was, and they realized the passion I was talking about it with and saw that it was really important to come. And my story with sleep and how we integrated it is really interesting. When I first came down to the course.
How long ago was that? October?
It was last October.
Okay.
I came down and I went back just through the moon. Yeah. I was jazzed up.
And what made you jazzed up?
What really got me excited was the way that you were talking about the way that we need to challenge our patients and ask the difficult questions. And it got me excited about not just sleep, but everything. Why can't we talk to our patients that way? Why can't we ask them difficult questions? Why do we have to let them shut us off?
Right.
No, why are you asking, doc, why are you asking me about that? Doesn't matter. In my past life, I would have said, you're right. It's okay. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it's just easier.
Oh, we don't have to talk about it. Let's go on.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
I'll see you at your next 5-minute hygiene exam.
Exactly. And that got me really excited because like a light bulb went off to me that this is how we need to be talking to our patients about everything.
So in all your years of CE classes, nobody's ever made that impact on
no.
you?
No. Okay. So I started the program off in October, like right away when I got back. I bought two of the home sleep tests. They were going out like crazy. And the unfortunate thing was with as busy as I got at the other offices, I had to cut back my clinical time at office number one where we were implementing this. And so that meant now it was all up to the team to motivate patients, to make them aware,
to create awareness,
to get to the point of diagnosis.
Right.
And I didn't do a good enough job preparing them for it.
Okay.
I didn't train them properly.
Did you bring them to the class with you?
I brought one of my assistants.
I
brought
saw
my,
that.
My,
yeah.
my lead assistant, and she's really passionate about this too.
But she's only in one spot at one time.
She's in one spot at one time, and her number one value to the practice is to be
chairside.
An amazing chairside assistant.
Yeah. So she's not the right fit to be the champion, as I say.
Exactly. At this point, that's not the position for her. So it kind of put Olivia, my associate, in a tough spot. Because now she has a team that wasn't completely properly trained. She understands the importance of it. She believed in the importance of it. But she wasn't ready to implement it herself.
Okay.
And now I'm only there one day a week.
Right.
So,
and when you go, you got fires to deal with.
Exactly.
And certain things.
So she was doing a great job at getting the HST out. We were sending both of them out every week.
Mm-hmm.
We were probably 6-7 HSTs a week.
Oh, but wow.
But then the patients would have to schedule back for a consultation with me.
Okay.
And I was only there on Thursdays.
Yeah, that's no good.
And that's not good.
Yeah, it never works for them on Thursdays.
It never works on Thursdays.
It's an unbelievably convenient excuse for patients.
Thursdays are never good for me.
Thursday's the one
it's
day.
It's the one day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of dropped the ball there.
Okay.
And realized that I needed to get Olivia prepared to be the one to be the face of that in our practice. And the more that she saw me interacting with the patients that I was able to connect with, the more interest she got in it, the more excited she got about it. So when I brought up to her that, hey, we need to get you some more education, she was really, really excited about it.
Okay.
And so she came down here with Kelly, who's been an amazing person to work with. She started off with me. I hired her actually as my sleep coordinator. So I hired her without a position to really do right after I got back from here in October. And she's just done everything. She's done everything from sit at the front desk and answer phones at a practice number four. She's kind of morphed into one of the traveling, roaming regional managers of the practices. I might get her back into trying to become that sleep champion. She doesn't know that, but
she's here this weekend.
She's
right?
here this weekend, so she might
find
out.
She's in a loud green shirt.
Yes. So she might find out about that on Monday.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Now let's talk about the second part of your life. Anything? What else would you tell somebody that's looking to come to our classes? What makes it a little bit different?
Well, the interaction level is so different than anything else. And I've done a lot of really powerful, informative CE courses. And I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I've returned from a lot more CE courses, like prepared to actually do something to my patients than I did when I left here.
Mm-hmm.
But those were technical things.
Right. Like, those were clinically based.
Clinically based. Like when I went to a CEREC course on anterior restorations, I could come back and make an awesome looking front tooth.
Yeah. And you're also doing those more regularly.
Yeah. So from that aspect, that's where that stands. But when I left here, the excitement that I had about what I was doing and the reason that we're doing it, that's what really stuck out to me. I mean, the whole thought that we can actually change somebody's life and not just give them a nicer looking smile or fix their little cavity. We can actually change their life and save their life.
And you're also doing a treatment fixing your smile. How many dentists fix smiles?
Everyone.
How many dentists isn't a cosmetic dentist, right?
Yeah.
But so few dentists are participating in sleep apnea therapy.
Yeah.
It's a unique selling proposition for your practice.
It absolutely is. And I feel like sleep is something that will, in turn, eventually start to lead towards growth in other areas in the practice as well.
I think one thing that was different from the course you took in October and now is I have more team involvement this time. Is that a good thing, not so good thing?
For myself, I want more you. Yeah. I want more T-Bone. I want more T-Bone and Aaron.
Yeah.
But for the team members that are here with the other participants, I think it's vital to hear from your team, because like you made brutally clear, you don't know. You don't know the answers to these questions. How does the patient interaction go?
The truth is I do know.
But for the sake of the course,
yeah,
you don't want to answer that. You want your team to answer that because you've empowered them to feel like this is their baby.
Is that unique?
It's not common.
Okay.
It's not common. And it's something I want to do. It's something you've inspired me to do.
Good. All right. So now, what else do you do, John, besides own dental practices? You do speaking, training?
Yeah, so...
How'd that come about?
So that really is... It was one of those things that, when I look back at it, it just kind of happened.
Okay.
And I think I did get involved with some of the education on the CEREC side of practice. And it all stemmed from the involvement I had with CEREC doctors. From day one, when I bought my CEREC machine, it was through the CEREC Doctors Program.
Which is CEREC Accept.
Through the CEREC Accept. I showed up there and met Rich Rosenblatt and Pete Gardell, who are still like two of the craziest, best dentists that I've
Rich
ever met.
Rich definitely is craziest. Pete is, a little bit more mellow. But,
yeah. But awesome, amazing people that I clicked with.
Yeah.
They're just my kind of people. And I realized that they were doing the kind of things I wanted to be doing. Implants, ortho, advanced stuff. I wanted to do that. And that was kind of holding... I was kind of held back from that before I had the CEREC machine. And it's not a machine that did it, but it was confidence in seeing other people actually doing it.
There's something about the community behind CEREC.
Community is crazy.
People call it a cult. And
it kind of
is. I think in a way it is, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like a cult like the weirdo people that are going to shoot each other at the end of the day, right?
No, they're just going to go out and binge drink with each other all night.
Or we're all going to omni-cam each other one night.
Yeah.
But it's an unbelievable community. And it's like-minded individuals that are really focused on new technologies and enhancing their practice. And it's a great group of people to be around.
Yeah. Yeah, so from day one with CEREC Accept and then going through all the coursework I possibly could in Scottsdale, that was kind of my first foray into the training. So I got to actually go back and mentor some of the CEREC Accept programs, mentor at some of the courses in Scottsdale, and realized I really enjoy teaching.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where you don't get paid much money to do it. But you're empowering others to do well, and there's nothing better than seeing that light bulb go off in somebody's eyes and just knowing that they're going to go back to their practice Monday and just kill it because of that one little thing that it was the missing link.
Right.
They needed that one missing link and now they're ready to just conquer the world. It just feels so good.
So how much teaching are you doing?
So last year I was on the road. It was 32 weekends of teaching. And that was a lot.
Is that too much?
I think it was too much.
What do you think is good?
There's no number that I can really say. I think that
once a month
would be enough to really keep me satisfied.
Twice a month
might be a little too much in some months, but not enough in others because your schedule's like mine. It's not always the same throughout the year.
Right.
But 1 to 2 times a month, I think, is kind of that sweet spot.
And you're roughly 3 times a month last year.
Last time it was about 3 times a month. And, threw a brand new baby into the mix. And that really, really made things a little bit difficult. So now I'm really trying to focus on whatever opportunities where I can really help the most people. Mm-hmm. And so trying to be involved in the right things.
Of the right things?
I think the types of events where... working on things where we can have these kind of really good interactions, one-on-one conversations with the people that we're helping to train and teach and learning about their practice. So I don't want to be at a at some seminar where you're just up there just going on and on and on about whatever topic. I want to actually connect with the people I'm working with and try to help them get their practice to a better place.
Okay. Yeah. And so what's your goal for this year and next year on that? 32 times this year?
No. That's the higher powers have said no. And that's
the higher power being the wife?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. She said no way to that. And that's good. I need somebody to...
Is she still with Eli Lilly?
No. So she's with another pharmacy insurance benefits company.
Okay. Yeah. So she works full-time?
Full-time, yeah.
You work full-time plus?
Yeah, plus, yeah.
Okay. And you have one son?
Yeah. Yep, just turned
one. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And so you're balancing and juggling all this.
Trying to balance it all. Yeah.
It's impossible. I
figured that out pretty quickly. Yeah,
it's pretty much impossible.
It's good though. We can act like it's possible. Mm-hmm. We can pretend.
Yeah. Have you met a lot of good friends through your CEREC stuff?
I would say the best friends I've ever had in my life are people that I've met through the various teaching and education events I've been a part of.
I can't stress to people enough. It's a great group of people.
Yep.
I mean, there's some duds and stuff, sure. But they're great. What I noticed, and listen, I've been in CEREC now almost 13 years, mm-hmm. okay, since 2004, it is a group of people that want to help each other like anything I've ever seen in life.
Yep.
And they're here to help each other, and we all have a desire to grow. And the other thing I've seen with CEREC, and how long have you been with CEREC now?
Three years.
Okay.
3.5 years.
So very relatively young. But it grows as you grow.
Yep.
So you start off with a machine that you bought to do crowns, mm-hmm. and now you're doing implant restorations, now you're doing surgical guides, now you're printing models from STL files. You know, now we're doing all kinds of stuff with it that we don't even know what it really means to our practice until we get into it and start using it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's an exciting thing to be a part of.
What about just 3D imaging?
3D imaging is, to me, that's an even bigger thing from a practice standpoint than CEREC. CEREC is a great tool. I would be really inconvenienced if I didn't have it, mm-hmm. but I could continue practicing without it. If somebody were to tell me that they're going to take my cone beams away or mm-hmm. we couldn't use it anymore, I'd probably have to quit. I rely on that. Whether we're trying to track down the source of somebody's pain, trying to check for pathology, plan an implant, mm-hmm. Check somebody's sinuses to make sure there's no pathology. There's just too many implications in the technology.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. What would be the one piece of advice you'd get to somebody coming out of school or 1 or 2 or 3 years in, whether they're early practice owner, whether they're looking to buy a practice, or whether they're an associate somewhere? What's the number one advice you've ever gotten and that you would pass on to somebody?
Find a mentor.
Okay.
Find somebody.
Define a mentor.
So it's a mentor is somebody that you trust their opinion, mm-hmm. somebody that you look up to and want to aspire to be. And
do they have to be older than you then?
They don't have to be older than you. Okay. They could be a peer. They could be somebody that's a year ahead of you. They could be somebody that's younger than you, but somebody that is doing the types of things you want to do. Find that person and just soak up everything that they have to tell you. Just take it all in. Listen to everything that they have to do. If they tell you to stop using that product, you're wasting your time. You're adding an extra step to your restorative mm-hmm. procedure. Stop using it. Just stop. There's certain things you just have to trust from the people that have done it before.
Yeah.
And not get caught up in the manufacturer recommendations on you have to use Gluma. On every restoration or else people's teeth are going to fall apart.
Or you'll get 2 extra megapascals of bond strength.
Yeah. You know, that's an extra cost to the practice. It's an extra
step.
More things that can go wrong. It's one less that, what if your assistant didn't order it? Yeah. Are you going to stop doing it restorations that day? I mean, come on. So, you know, take that advice from people. Listen to what their experience has been. And the other thing that is really important to do, and you won't know day one, but decide what type of practice you want to be involved in. And I don't mean physical practice location, but what type of dentistry do you want to be involved in?
What are the different types of dentistry?
You know, I see the kind of bread and butter GP, mm-hmm. they're happy doing a couple of services, fillings, crowns, cleaning teeth and
endo
maybe extractions, but you know, really limiting your focus. And if that's what you want to do, then by all means do that. But know that in the upcoming world, that's probably going to hold you back a lot.
Yeah.
So are you interested in that? Or are you interested in full mouth dentistry? Are you interested in full patient dentistry? Are you interested in full body healthcare? Are you interested in sleep?
What are some procedures you've added to your practice that have made an impact? Or technologies, besides CEREC and cone beam?
Sure. The biggest procedures that I've added, implants. Okay. Implants are a game changer. You know that. Patients, nobody wants a bridge. Nobody wants to be missing teeth. Nobody wants dentures that are floating around. So implants are a huge thing. Ortho is one of the biggest components that I've gotten the most satisfaction out of. I love seeing people come back with confidence. Mm-hmm. I love seeing people come back with, I'm working with a couple of people that aren't that much younger than me right now. They're late 20s. Parents could never afford orthodontics for them. They finally have a stable job. They said, you know what? I want a nice smile. I had one guy tell me, he goes, I just want my teeth straight because I just want to find a girl.
Ooh.
I'm like, you know what, man? We're going to take care of that. Not a problem. I can't help you with anything else. I can help you with that, though.
Yeah, you could help him.
I could help him with a few things. Yeah. I know some people.
Yeah, he knows. I bet you know some people from Kazakhstan.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. John, you're a great dude, man.
Hey, you're a great dude.
I mean, your voice here is very different than your voice at my pool table.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing what a little bit of time and a lot less alcohol can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I feel like I've kind of made a transition in my career recently where I've realized that I'm here to try and help the doctors that I'm working with succeed. And when there's a struggle, I wasn't looking at myself. I was looking at everyone else.
Yeah.
And I really had to start looking in the mirror. And that was tough. It was really hard. It was, you know, we talk about some of the struggles in life, some of the bumps we have to get over. And that was kind of the most recent and biggest one that I really had to get over. I had to start to look at myself in the mirror. And
you had to find your why.
Yep. That's exactly it. And I feel like I have that now.
For the time being.
For the time being.
So you're going to be down to 3 practices by the time this comes out.
Yep.
Do you ever envision having partners or multiple owner or say ownership people for your associates to help retain them?
Yes.
Because it's unlikely you're going to be able to keep people forever.
Yep. And that's one of the other realizations I've come to recently is that this associate-driven model that I've adopted, it's the classic multiple practice model, it's not really sustainable for the long term because you will inevitably have doctor turnover. You're going to have doctors that move. They're not going to be the right fit. They're going to want bigger aspirations. And doctor turnover is expensive.
Yeah.
Let's just boil
it's a morale booster killer for the team.
It just kills everyone.
Patients have questions. Like, why am I seeing somebody different every time I come in?
It's miserable.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, we had a doctor go on vacation for a week and I was covering for him.
Yeah.
It was like 20 questions with every patient. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
I'm the owner.
My name's on the billing.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So yes, I want to change that model. And I feel like I've started to adopt a good model that's going to allow the associates to become co-owner partners in the business. And it's a setup where everyone really wins. And we hear that too often. We hear that promise all the time. You know, whether it's equipment reps, manufacturers, whatever. Everyone wins in this scenario. No, this is different. Everyone really does win. The co-owner partner wins. The patients win. The team wins. I win. Everybody wins, whether it's financial, whether it's a personal satisfaction, whether it's the quality of care. It's really a good scenario. And so I'm working through a way to offer partnership opportunities to the doctors that are working with me.
That's good.
Yeah.
You think it's important for you to get that done?
I think it's really important for me to get that done because when I look back at my own story, that was the thing that caused me to leave my first associateship. And if that had been on the table, who knows where I'd be now.
Right.
I may still be at that
Obviously,
practice.
You're lucky.
I'm incredibly lucky. And, you know, to that point, I think that too often, the generation that I'm kind of associated with, when we have a roadblock in front of us or we have a struggle, it's too easy to just say, why me? Oh, poor me. Let's have a pity party. Let's feel bad. Instead of just getting to the root of the problem, keeping your head down and getting through it. And we all have those situations, whether it's personal, whether it's in our practice, whatever it is. And we just have to get through it. And we're people. We have hard things happen in life. I mean, I've dealt with some really, really terrible things in life that at times I woke up in the morning and was just like, what? Why even keep going?
There's no point.
But you just pull yourself up and say, you know, today's going to be a better day and we're going to get through it. And that's what you have to do when you're faced with those things. You just have to get through it.
It's awesome. John, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I love coming down to harass you and crash on somebody's bed. I don't know whose bed it is. But
we'll find your room.
Yeah,
there's plenty here.
Somewhere. I mean, I'm looking at a bed that looks like it came from the casting room of a different type of production, but...
On that note, we will end this podcast. Thank you, John.
Oh, thanks,
Pozinski Poshikinitz. Hey, by the way, how do people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Facebook. I try to post stuff.
They can't spell your last name.
They can't spell my last name, so that could be a problem. You can find me via email. That's the best way. jp@evodds.com.
E Edward Victor O as in Oscar. DDS.com. jp@evodds. Extra virgin olive. DDS.com.
All right. Exactly.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.